episode of the DeCesare Group podcast. I'm glad you're here, and I'm your host, Jim DeCesare. Thank you for listening. You know, for over a year now, the DeCesare Group podcast has covered business and economic development news here in South Central Kentucky, and this podcast is a companion to our newsletter, Soke Economic Development and Business News, which you can subscribe to by going to our website, thedecesaregroup.com. It'll hit your inbox every Monday morning. I've really been looking forward to this week's episode with WKU President Emeritus Gary Ransdell. Dr. Ransdell served as the ninth president of WKU from September 1997 until his retirement in June of 2017. He's an alumnus of WKU, earning degrees in 1973 and 74, and it's where he met and married his wife, Julie. Dr. Ransdell held leadership positions at Clemson University, the University of Louisville, and Southern Methodist University before returning to WKU in 1997. After his retirement, Ransdell spent time as president of the Semester at Sea program. Now he's fully retired and back in Bowling Green. Earlier this year, he and former Bowling Green Mayor Johnny Webb were inducted into the Junior Achievement Business Hall of Fame. Here's my conversation with Dr. Gary Ransdell. Dr. Ransdell, you're the 50th episode. Thanks for being on the DeCesare Group podcast.
I don't know, 50th. I don't know, is that diamond or gold or silver? What is that?
It's an achievement with
all
us,
right, there we go.
Whatever it is. So how's retirement treating you?
Retirement is good. It's now, let me see, it's been about 7 years, although I spent two or three of those years with the Semester at Sea. But retirement's good. Julie and I are back in Bowling Green for good.
Good.
I promised her this will be our last move. We're even building a home, so this... we're looking forward to, I'm engaged in a lot of things in Bowling Green these days already,
yeah.
But looking forward to even being more so in the years to come.
Well, we had, so I know you're involved with SkyPAC and the Arch of Southern Kentucky. You want to talk right. about that
well,
just
actually,
a few moments?
I'm current chairman of the board for the Arch of Southern Kentucky, which was created with the merger of SkyPAC and Orchestra Kentucky about 3 years ago. And now includes the Ramsey Theater Company and Bowling Green on stage, and it's an amazing program that really drives the quality of life for our community. And we're operating I hate to say this because we're not for profit, but we're also not for loss.
Yeah,
we're operating in a profitable manner where we have good business practices. Jeff Reed's an amazing musical director, conductor of Orchestra Kentucky, and president and CEO. He's an attorney. He's really good with money and dollars.
Yeah. Well, and so, he's been on the podcast.
Yeah,
so
I'm proud of what Arts of Southern Kentucky has become. We're working with the General Assembly right now on adding a wing on the SkyPAC for storage and rehearsal space.
Nice.
I'm really enjoying it, and it's important for our community, and I know we're going to talk about how important this community is. And how important that's been in my life, professionally and personally.
Yeah, and the reason I ask you on here is you're kind of part of my, you are part of my Community First series. Some of the people that have been on the podcast have always had Community First at mind,
right?
And whether it's Mike Buchanan or Speaker Jody Richards,
sure.
and others, I thought it would be good to have you on here because of the time that you spent as president
right.
of Western Kentucky University. That was a there were a lot of changes that took place during that time
yes.
that have really taken the university to what I think is the next level. And starting that off, you know, some of the programs like the doctorate of nurse practitioner.
Well, first of all, my whole philosophy in my 20 years as president of WKU was I'm an American first, but I'm a Kentuckian and I'm a WKU alumnus and a member of this community. Even when I came to school here in 1969 as a young puppy growing up in Louisville, this became home. And while Julie and I had an 18-year road trip while I was building my career at SMU and Clemson, we came back here for a reason, and it worked out well, and it was an amazing 20 years as president. But for that entire 20 years, we were entirely focused on what was good for Bowling Green, Warren County was good for WKU. What was good for WKU was good for Bowling Green, Warren County, and the broader region.
Right.
I never had a regional mentality. I was always thinking national and international, because to the extent that we could do that, that was an impetus for Bowling Green to grow and prosper. And I was always involved with the Chamber of Commerce, the city, the county, Mike Buchanan that whole time. But whoever the mayor was, I think I worked with half a dozen different mayors. But at
yeah.
any rate, we were always about how we're going to drive the quality of life and the economic development of this community. You mentioned the DNP. That was one of a half a dozen doctoral programs that we initiated. you may have been a member of the General Assembly when we were fighting to offer doctoral degrees.
I was there.
We had to get down in the ditches with UK and U of L to get approval for terminal degrees at WKU. But we won that battle because a few years earlier, we won the battle on engineering degrees, electrical, mechanical, and civil engineering, because I knew that putting licensed engineers into our workplace in this region of Kentucky would drive the economy, and that has proven to be the case. I knew that doctoral degrees, terminal degrees in psychological sciences and nursing and several other areas were important to driving those important workforce dimensions. I knew that the health sector particularly needed those kinds of degrees, the Doctor of Education. I knew that our school systems needed to be providing a terminal degree option for educators across our region. So all of those terminal degrees were part of an economic development strategy that really started with the engineering degrees, but they were also in my quiver of arrows, if you will, when I would meet with business and industry looking to relocate here as to what WKU could do for them. And here are the degrees that we're beginning that can facilitate the development of your workforce.
Yeah.
And so that was always on front and center on my mind. And I so enjoyed and thrived on being part of the growth and prosperity of this community and region.
Well, and we appreciate all that you did, and especially your leadership on those particular issues. And, you know, I fill in occasionally as an economic development director here and there. I spent some time in Logan County, and I'm actually the interim down in Simpson County now.
Right.
And I know when we have site visits with site selectors from all over the world, not just the region or the Southeast, but really all over the world. One of the things that I always talk about is the engineering program,
right?
Because all these advanced manufacturing facilities, they need engineers.
Yes.
And they want them to be close. And so we have that now. And that's a quiver. That's an arrow in our quiver that we use to attract industries here.
When I was on the board when we were creating the Transpark, and Dan Cherry and Don Vitale and Rick Wilson were chairing that over the years. Anyway, I was on that. But that told me at that time that if this is going to be successful, if we're going to bring these kinds of manufacturing enterprises to our community, the university's got to give them the degree competency that they're going to need to grow their workforce. Engineering was at the top of that list. And so I was really, and you can remember, we fought pretty hard with UK and U of L on that to get those approvals. But we did.
It almost got a little bloody at times.
Maybe. We won the battle, and I was determined to win the war.
Yeah.
And whatever that meant, we, you know, I was all in, and I was willing to fight the fight, whether it was in Frankfort, Washington, or at home.
And you know, it all worked out in the end, which is the good thing.
Yeah.
And I think in the end, you know, while we have other universities within the state, that collaboration with the University of Kentucky may be a little bit stronger now, especially with the medical school.
Yeah, I initially was looking at osteopathic medicine and was in communication with, at the time, James Hurley, who was the president of the Pikeville College, maybe Pikeville University now.
Yeah, UPike.
UPike, about partnering on an osteopathic degree, and he was willing to bring that to Bowling Green, and we kind of have an independent but a WKU-UPike collaboration. As I communicated with the medical community here in Bowling Green, that had merit. But then some others thinking, well, why don't we partner with UK? And of course, I was battling UK at every turn of the wheel on just about everything at the time because
it's a turf battle.
Yeah, a bit. And they didn't want the what they considered encroachment on their turf. I considered it all about what's best for Kentucky. Anyway, I finally came to the realization that, okay, let's go in that direction. So I communicated with Eli Capiluto, the president of UK, and we worked out that degree program. That's not really a joint degree. It's a collaborative degree.
Mm-hmm.
We're guaranteed so many slots of pre-med graduates into the medical school here. There are some other dimensions of that agreement that makes it a collaborative program with WKU and UK. And I think our community is the better for it because we're now producing doctors who can go into our region and go to work having completed a degree here in Bowling Green.
And that, you know, that's pretty outstanding. I don't think a lot of people know that we have a medical school right here in downtown Bowling Green.
Yeah, and it followed on the heels of the Doctor of Physical Therapy, which was one of the degree programs. Again, in the healthcare sector, we had to have more PT, licensed physical therapists, in our community and across our region. We were woefully inadequate. And that was the impetus for getting the Doctor of Physical Therapy degree started. And then that pushed us to expand, almost double the size of our nursing program. That's when we introduced the Doctor of Nursing Practice, because nurses, the movement was moving toward the DNP being the entry-level credential for nurses, as hard as that is to believe. And so the Doctor of Nursing Practice and the Doctor of Physical Therapy, that was the impetus to build the facility out on the Medical Center campus, because we wanted our students in those two disciplines to have their clinical access directly in the medical center facilities.
Right.
And it was a great partnership. And that kind of led to the whole the collaborative medical degree with UK going right across the street.
Yeah. And I think it's safe to say now that even though there were some I don't want to say battles, but the university, different universities didn't want us to have different programs. But when it's all said and done, and when the smoke cleared, everybody's programs are still full.
Sure, exactly.
And we were woefully short of physical therapists in the region, and it was tough to get a spot, whether it was at Bellarmine or UK or wherever there was a program. And so, especially for Western kids, you know, west of I-65.
Yeah.
And so filling that void, that was huge. And I remember those conversations as well when we were in Frankfurt with
My philosophy was demonstrate the need on what our community needs, and I'll fight for it.
Yeah.
And that's just the attitude that I had. And fortunately, our faculty were in sync with that, and we were able to do some pretty exciting things. In addition to having a couple of successful capital campaigns and basically rebuilding the campus and, you know, those kinds of things that were a big part of what my work was about for 20 years.
I think WKU, and I know you'll agree with me, is probably one of the prettiest and most appealing campuses in the country.
No,
maybe
agree.
In the world.
I agree. But in 1997, it was tired. None of our residence halls were air-conditioned. Our academic facilities were, our deferred maintenance inventory was daunting. But through private fundraising, through at the time with the Patton administration, to a lesser extent in the Fletcher administration, and to a yet lesser extent in the Steve Beshear administrations, you know, we were able to get capital projects funded for the most part for about 10 years. And we really made hay with that. Speaker Richards was a great partner. I wore him out on opportunities, but he was receptive to it. And we had a great partnership in the House with House leadership. And as squirrely as he could be sometimes with Senate President David Williams. And he didn't want Jody to always get his way, but in the end, he usually acquiesced because, you know, I had a good relationship with him. And we got a lot of buildings funded. And Senator McConnell, regardless of your politics, he directed $74 million to WKU while I was president. Some brick and mortar, some programmatic, some things that WKU would do in the community. And he was in a position to deliver it, and he loved doing it. And we had a great, still do, have a great relationship. And so I was willing to work Frankfort, Washington, across Kentucky, wherever I needed to go to get resources and create opportunities for WKU and for our community, I was willing to do it.
Well, we appreciate that. And I think one of the cool things that I always remember is that you always touted the online programs where, I don't know if you were the first, but you talked a lot about how you could get your whole degree online and never have to sit foot on campus. And that's good for the university.
Well, that was a growing phenomenon at the time. Mm-hmm. And we grew our online enrollment to, 3,000-ish. And I felt like there's potential for significantly more than that, some in partnership with our three regional campuses in Owensboro, Elizabethtown, Glasgow, and a little bit in Somerset.
Mm-hmm.
But that was a growing phenomenon. I felt like that was the way we could grow our enrollment, because not everybody that we were pursuing to be part of the WKU family was able to, you know, come to Bowling Green and do it, you know, face to face. So that was an important part of our enrollment growth. And over that 20 years, we grew enrollment from about 13,000 in 1997 to a high of 21,000.
Yeah.
And the online, but you know, we're adding to our residence halls, and our on-campus population grew significantly too. We were really pushing online degrees. We were really emphasizing internationalization of our degree programs, pushing mm-hmm. study abroad. We built an honors college that absolutely competed with Center College and other great small private university colleges and universities. That right. was our competition for the honors college. And we built something very special with some 1,300 students in the Honors College. And that was an outgrowth of the Gatton Academy,
yeah.
again, which was uniquely WKU. No other university was in a position to start such an academy. Juliet Roberts had built our Center for Gifted Studies, which gave us a card to play that neither UK or U of L, much to their chagrin, was able to play to get that funded. And
yeah.
and you recall those conversations in the General Assembly. So that was a battle we won that really wasn't much of a battle because we were the only one qualified yeah. to do that. Gatton Academy, Honors College was the next dimension. And we were able to build our academic reputation, our academic strength, and be a destination point for Kentucky's best and brightest students. And that's what we were trying to achieve and I believe did achieve. 90% of our Honors College students studied abroad. About 10% of the rest of the student body studied abroad.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's about typical for high-profile, high-quality public institutions. But we never looked at the Honors College as a public institution.
Mm-hmm.
That was always about competing with small private universities in a very intimate, personalized experience. But when we brought highly gifted and talented minds to Bowling Green, we knew that a high percentage of them would stay here.
Yeah.
Again, economic development and driving the quality of life and economy of this region was a large part of our creating such an honors college because we wanted to get those students to Bowling Green knowing that many of them would stay here and go to work. And that, again, was something else we could sell to those business and industries across America and across the globe that they had to gain confidence that the workforce opportunity here could meet their needs intellectually and quantitatively.
Yeah. And when we talk about the Gatton Academy, for those that don't know, that is the best and brightest from around the state that are
come in and spend their junior and senior year in high school here, and it combines the junior and senior year in high school with the freshman and sophomore year in college. So when they graduate from the Gatton Academy, they've earned 60 hours of college credit. They're taking classes in our classrooms with our faculty. And so when they graduate from the Gatton Academy, they basically have completed their freshman, sophomore year at WKU. But instead, it's not just a high-profile, high-intellectual stimulation high school. All their experiences are in and among our campus, on mm-hmm. our campus. And we renovated about a $10 million project, Florence Snyder Hall, one of our original residence halls on campus.
Right.
Originally White Stone Hall. Anyway, we renovated it to become the Gatton Academy, and then Bill Gatton made an additional $10 million gift to put wings on that academy to get it up to the 200 that we're now. 100 high school juniors, 100 high school seniors.
Mm-hmm.
So every year, 100 new high school juniors come into the Gatton Academy, and we graduate 100 each year as they become seniors. And, you know, we started out keeping about 75% of those Gatton Academy graduates at WKU. Then the Ivy League and Caltech and Stanford and University of Chicago and MIT and everybody else got wind of that once that was proclaimed the number one high school in America
yeah.
for several years in a row.
Yep.
All of a sudden, those institutions say, oh my God, what, you know, there's a talent. So they began to recruit Gatton. So we've kind of, I think we're still getting 35 or 40% of our Gatton Academy graduates to stay here. And then UK gets some, U of L will get a few. But, you know, I say lose a lot of them because I don't like to lose any student from our campus.
Well,
but
sure.
The Gatton Academy students are so off the charts and so world class in their intellectual ability and their curiosity and their research capacity that they're at the top of the charts for what the Ivy League and other of the world's great academic institutions want.
And a lot of them go. I mean, it's not unusual to hear of a Gatton student going to Oxford.
Well, exactly. And we really tried to build up our Fulbright Scholars Program. We created an Office of Scholar Development that created Gilman's and Goldwater's and Udall's and preparing for some Rhodes and students that, and Fulbrights that could compete for those scholarships. And now we're awarding 40, 50, 60 a year of Gilman's and Fulbrights that have a study abroad dynamic as part of that highly prestigious national scholarship.
Well, and talking about study abroad, I mean, there's great opportunities on the campus at WKU. Talk about Harlaxen a little bit and tell us about that.
There was a time in, 2008, 9, 10, when we were really embracing a leading American university with international reach. Mm-hmm. And that had two major themes: a leading American university, not a good Kentucky university, a leading American university. And I was driven, and I think most on our campus understood and were driven to achieve that and have statistically measurable variables that could document the achievement of that vision. The second three words, with international reach, meant to send a strong signal that we want to internationalize, because my feeling was, if we graduate students, whether they stay in this community or wherever they might go, they better be comfortable in a global context, because that's going to be part of their job. I don't care what their job is. I don't care if you're a nurse, accountant, whatever the case might be. Sooner or later, you're going to have an international dynamic.
Absolutely.
In your job performance. And so with the advent of that mindset, we began to look for semester-long study abroad opportunities. And semester at sea was one that we discovered. Harlaxen, Keith Jennings was the president of the University of Evansville, and we became acquainted in a Federal Reserve Board meeting. I overheard him having a conversation with one of our other board members about a program that Evansville had in Harlaxen, England, mm-hmm. near Grantham, England. And so, you know, as was my nature, I kind of inserted myself into that conversation. Tell me more about that.
Yeah.
Well, they had a trustee that received a gift at that time. A trustee of Stanford owned it, and a trustee at Evansville purchased this manor house, think Hogwarts, mm-hmm. in Harlaxen, a little village outside Grantham, England. And University of Evansville was sending students there every semester. So, long story short, I got in that mix and signed an agreement between WK and University of Evansville, and we would send 30 to 40 students every semester, most from the Honors College. Mm-hmm. We would always have the best students that they had there. And after a semester or two, they agreed that we were sending them the best students that they had there. And so they would study there and get 15 hours of college credit, 6 British faculty, and we usually send a faculty member or two there each semester. Some faculty came from other universities that participated. And it was a live-in residential experience with about 150 students from across America, and mostly students from private institutions. Mm-hmm. And our students could and did compete. And that was an amazing experience classes were Monday through Thursday, so every weekend was a 3-day weekend, so they could travel.
Right.
They could get on the train, go through the tunnel, and go to Paris for the weekend. About every other weekend, the students were on their own, and every other weekend, they would all go somewhere, Stratford-on-Avon, to study Shakespeare for the weekend or whatever. So it was an amazing experience, and I was really proud of that program, and that, you know, continues to exist today. And then, of course, the other one was Semester at Sea, which was a whole different take on an international experience.
Yeah.
But those were two semester-long programs that I wanted us to be part of to give our students an opportunity to do some very special things. And the thing with Evansville, our students got a bit of a break, because the deal was, I'll send to you, University of Evansville, what a student would pay at WKU for their tuition, room, and board. And that was less than what a student paid to attend the University of Evansville, which they had to pay when they did a semester at Harlaxen.
Gotcha.
And so that was their trade-off for getting high-quality students in our Honors College to study there. They were willing to give up some money to have that to stimulate their academic environment at Harlaxen. So, yeah, we gave up tuition and room and board revenue to participate. But what a marvelous opportunity for the students who did participate.
And this all stemmed from you overhearing a conversation.
Exactly right.
It's amazing how sometimes things like that work out.
Keep those antennas up, you pay attention, and things come your way. But you have to have enough instincts and enough confidence. If you hear a conversation going on behind that door, being able to kick that door open.
Right.
To become engaged in it.
And you've mentioned the word research a few times here. Talk about the WKU Center for Research and Development. It's the Innovation Campus now.
But, well, when you were in school and when I was in school, I hate to use the term, the old mall, but we had a mall here in Bowling Green.
Historic mall.
We had a mall here in Bowling Green that was built in the 60s. What was called a Woolco, a department store. It had a Castronaut department store. It had a movie theater. It had a barbershop. It had small stores, drug stores, and
Floor
so forth.
Florsheim and things like that. Yeah.
It was a developer out of Pittsburgh that owned it, and he developed it and built it and developed it. And it was a pretty good success until about the 80s or 90s. The other mall in Bowling Green was built by then.
Yeah, the new mall.
And so the new mall. And so the old mall was vacated. At the time, Speaker Richards and Harry Mobley and the General Assembly were creating an economic development fund that was going to have about $5 million in it to stimulate economic development in Kentucky. Well, I got in on that, and I worked with Speaker Richards, and through a lot of work on both our parts, you may have had to approve this, but at any rate, we were able to get about $3 million of that fund.
Mm-hmm. Of the five.
Of the five. And we were going to build a Center for Research and Development somewhere that we could have some faculty go and really expedite their research.
Right.
But, you're not going to build much for $3 million. So Jody and I were talking, and we were in the car, and we drove by the old mall. Jody, that's it. He said, "What do you mean?" I said, "Let me do some research. Let me find out who owns this. It's vacant. Why can't we buy that and build a Center for Research and Development that could be much more, have much more potential?"
Mm-hmm.
Long story short, I found the owner. He was interested. We created what's called a bargain sale. We paid about half the market value, and he took the other half off as a charitable deduction, a charitable gift.
Right.
Half the market value. And so good for him, good for us. And so we used that money to buy it, and then Senator McConnell came through with an earmark that allowed us to put a new roof on the place and kind of build it out in the interior core to meet our needs. So we put our Applied Physics Center in there. We put our Institute for Combustion Science and Environmental Technology in that building. We began to recruit entrepreneurs. HitSense had their first office there when Chris and Clinton Mills were still students at WKU on the Don Vitale Entrepreneurial Scholarship, and they came to me sheepishly saying, "We got to drop out of school. We're making too much money. We can't afford to give up time to be in class." They started their offices there and built what is now HitSense. And that was repeated over and over and over again. And now it's called the Innovation Campus, and Buddy Steen and Sam Ford are doing great work out there. So they're continuing to expand what that facility means. So our whole objective was to take an economic depressant in our community and turn it into an economic stimulant for our community. Again, the whole reason we acquired that property, 27 acres and everything under that roof, was to drive the economy. And with it, all the out parcels. So we sold property to what is now all those strip businesses.
Elmas.
Elmas out in front.
Speedway.
Speedway. And event. And most recent was the Chick-fil-A right there.
The car wash.
We sold all those out parcels. And at the time, some of the leases stayed in place for a period of time because they had leases that maybe had 8 or 10 years on them. So at any rate, now all that property is being developed for entrepreneurial purposes, driving that spirit in our community.
And even the DeCesare Group has a space in the
there
collaboration center.
And so we located the University supercomputer out there, which is continuing to be upgraded. And we lease space on that supercomputer to business industry across our region as well. So many reasons why that's been a great.
It's a great asset to the community.
Yeah.
And really,
and I'm proud of that. I really am proud of that. And so is Speaker Richards, and so is Senator McConnell, and everybody else who was involved in helping to get that done.
And that facility has been able to attract a lot of high tech. I mean, we're talking defense contractors.
Oh yeah. We had
big stuff.
Yeah.
Everything from defense contractors to beer have been in there.
A company, I believe it's called International Warfare Associates, mm-hmm. did a lot of the detection of penetration of our military systems. They had a major operation there, which nobody knew about.
Right. Yeah, don't tell too much.
I was able to get secret clearance. I don't know if it's top secret or not, but I was able to get a sufficient enough clearance to walk through those facilities and show me what they did. It was just incredible. They were connected all over the globe protecting our military systems. Nobody knew that.
Yeah.
But Electronic Warfare Associates, that's what it was. Ed Tivel was the principal, a principal, with Electronic Warfare Associates. And man, I wanted so bad to make a big deal out of
it. But
couldn't. They'd have had to shoot me.
Yeah, I know. That's good. And Ed's a great guy. So talk about some of your highs and lows at WKU. I'm hoping there's a lot more highs and lows.
The highs had to have been two things. Rebuilding the campus physically. Mm-hmm. Over the course of 20 years, we invested a shade over $900 million, nearly $1 billion in capital construction. State money, private money, all over the map. Some recapitalization of our residence halls, where we created the Student Life Foundation, mm-hmm. which led to the renovation of all of our residence halls. Some very entrepreneurial moves that were hard to explain to some people in Frankfurt when we had to get some approvals, but we did. I'm really proud of what the campus became over that 20 years. And you said it earlier, there's not a more beautiful campus anywhere. And I commend President Comboni for keeping some of that going. Proud of that. And when I was hired as president, one of my major charges was get us into the 20th century in fundraising. And we immediately launched a $100 million capital campaign that raised $102 million. A few years later, we launched the second one. I raised $200 million, $204 million. So we'd never had a $1 million gift before. And I think over that 20 years, I think we raised 50 or 60, Gordon Ford being the $10 million gift to name the College of Business. Anyway, that was a great source of pride to really create the confidence among individuals of wealth who are capable of making a gift to understand why it was important to invest in WKU. And I think I cannot think of a single individual that isn't proud of the gift they made and the impact that it had.
Yeah.
And that was really a great source of pride. So those two things. And then, of course, completely transforming the academic experience, building our regional campuses online, new doctoral degrees, new relevant baccalaureate degrees, engineering, for example. You know, those things I'm really proud of. The Honors College, growing us internationally, things we've talked about. You know, it's a very satisfying and, if I may say so myself, a pretty long list of things we were able to achieve that I believe did transform an institution.
Absolutely. And one other thing I wanted to bring up, because you were definitely a big part of that, is the Alumni Center. And it's important that alumni know that they're appreciated after they leave the Hill.
Well, of course.
And obviously you want them to come back and be donors as well.
Well, we want them to be engaged.
Yeah.
My second job at WKU, my first job was an admissions counselor in 74 to 76. Went up to Indiana University, finished my doctorate, came back 78 to 81. I was the assistant, then associate director of alumni relations with Lee Robertson.
Yeah.
Great adventure there.
I can only imagine.
Yeah. And then I went to SMU as director of alumni relations for 7 years before going to Clemson as a vice president. At any rate, I knew the importance of alumni relations in the life of a university. I always said, you know, we've got three primary constituents: students, faculty and staff, and alumni. I began to include the community and the public at large in that. And, of course, that would include members of the General Assembly, elected officials, and all that. But students, faculty, staff, and alumni is your internal family. Mm-hmm. And I wanted our alumni to know that they had a equal, they were of equal importance to our students and our faculty and staff. And I think that began to be embraced. And, you know, the Alumni Center was in what was H.H. Cherry's home, the president's home on campus. Mm-hmm. And it was the president's home for Paul Garrett. And I think that house was vacated with Kelly Thompson, who moved into a home over on State Street. At any rate, it was a home. It really wasn't an alumni center. There wasn't any place for alumni together.
Right.
The interior wasn't reflective of our history and our culture and our pride and our spirit. Mm-hmm. And so we began to put things in motion to build an alumni center. Del Augustine made the initial gift. And eventually, over time, Jim and Eva Martins gave a significant gift to put their name on the building.
Yeah.
And now that's a great source of pride. And it started out as a $4 or $5 million project, and ended up being a $10 million project. But that's another story. Anyway, it's a wonderful
facility.
It's really
nice.
you walk in and you feel like you're in a place that reflects our spirit, mm-hmm, and our history. And so it exudes the WKU experience, and yeah, that's what an alumni center should be. And I know, I've got 3 events in the next few weeks at the Martins Alumni Center.
Yeah.
I, every time I enter the building, I take pride in it.
It's a wonderful facility, and it's one of the many wonderful facilities we have on campus, and we appreciate all that. So the really cool thing about you and Julie is that we see you around town more, and we see you at ball games, and so you're still active with the WKU campus and, right, and the students, and that's just phenomenal.
Well,
we're so glad to see you.
When I retired, I'd been on the board for a semester at CU. When we started doing that, I researched the program and talked to people, and Julie and I went on the ship for a summer, a brief leg of a voyage, just to get acquainted. Anyway, the president and CEO at the time, We began to talk, and he began to seek it. One thing led to another, and I went on to the board for a semester at CU. That would have been around 2013 or 14. So when I retired, now it's my retirement, it just so happened that I'm going to get around to your answering
yeah,
your question
no,
in a minute.
Take your time.
It just so happened that the president and CEO of semester at CU, who had been a provost at the University of Tennessee at one time and at Colorado State before that. Anyway, he had already announced his intention to retire at about the same time. And so my colleagues on the Board of Trustees said, "Hey, Ransdale, why don't you do this for a while?" So Julie and I talked about it, and I had no intention of going to another university. I was retiring as a president and for 20 years, and, I'd about...
It's a pretty good way to go out.
Pulled about all the rabbits out of the hat that I could. And so Julie and I talked about it, and I said, "Well, okay." And at that point, Colorado State University is the academic partner for a semester at CU, which means when a student does a semester at CU voyage, they get their academic credit through Colorado State University. It's like you transfer to Colorado State for a semester, but you're on a ship circumnavigating the globe.
Yeah, because that's where all the ports of navigation are at Colorado.
Well, yeah, right, of course. Yeah. Anyway, so I said, "Give me 6 months off." And so they got another board member just to kind of serve in an interim from July 1 to December 31 of 2017. I retired on June 30, 17. So I started January 1 of 2018. An amazing program. Learned so much. A semester at CU voyage, you're 110 days, 55 days at CU, 55 days in port. Mm-hmm. Your classes are at CU. When you're in port, you're in a port 5 or 6 days at a time. So you usually do about a dozen countries over the course of a semester at CU voyage. Complete immersion in those countries. Language, food, music, arts, history, currency, all different.
Yeah.
And it's such a life-changing experience. And I really enjoyed it. And I was traveling a lot, as you can imagine, but so enjoyed it. And Julie went with me a few times. We visited some amazing countries. And when I wasn't in the office in Fort Collins, Colorado, I was usually mostly in California, some New York, raising money because we were building an endowment for a semester at sea. Anyway, pandemic kind of wreaked havoc with that model.
Yeah.
And we had the spring 20 voyage, March of 2020, and WKU had 15 students on that voyage. Brian Strau, a faculty member in economics, was on the faculty on the ship at that time.
Mm-hmm.
We had to terminate that voyage in Cape Town and send all the students home because the ship, the pandemic was beginning to rage, if you will, by that time. And it started with Shanghai. They wouldn't let the ship in because ships had such a connotation.
Yeah, yeah.
Early in the pandemic.
Right.
And Malaysia didn't. India didn't. Mumbai, India didn't. Finally, we had to stop the ship somewhere, let these students off the ship. So we found some opportunities in Mauritius. And then we got into Cape Town, and finally we just had to terminate the voyage, send the students home, and the faculty were great. Each semester we would hire about 25 faculty from all over the globe to be our faculty.
Mm-hmm.
And they allowed these students to finish up online. But that voyage was cut short. We had to cancel the fall 20 voyage and the spring 21 voyage, and at that point in the summer of 20, that Julie and I just decided, you know what, I'm tired of laying people off. That was never a long-term thing for me.
Right.
The vice president for academic affairs was being groomed. We had a succession plan in place. He was ready. So I just told the board it's time to retire, and Julie and I got to get on back to Kentucky. And by doing that, two and a half jobs were saved because I could vote my salary to that next cut. Anyway, but it was an amazing time, and I so enjoyed it. And I love seeing WKU students on the ship over each of the voyages that I presided over. So anyway, that was a great experience. And again, I had such a passion for international study that it was kind of a natural, actually.
Sure. Well, we're glad you're back in Bowling Green.
We are too, and we love being here. And this is home. This is where our heart is. It's where our passions are. Most of our friends and... we do have some friends elsewhere, but they're mostly here.
Yeah.
And, so I'm going to be all in this community, and whatever the next volunteer opportunity might be, I'm all in.
All right. All right. Last question. Favorite song?
Favorite song? Forever Young.
There you go.
Rod
I knew
Stewart.
It.
Yeah, you betcha. In fact, that kind of became a commencement staple for us, as you will recall.
Yes, I do.
Because what it says is so pertinent to a group of graduating seniors in terms of their mindset, and it's Forever Young. And it also states that I'm behind you forever. And that's the relationship I tried to have with our students.
Gary, thanks for being on the podcast.
You bet, man. Thank you.
Thanks again to Dr. Gary Ransdell, WKU President Emeritus, for joining us for our 50th episode of the DeCesare Group podcast. And thank you so much for listening. If you like what you hear, please share it with a friend. And don't forget to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Leave us a review and share your feedback with us. You can also follow the DeCesare Group across all of our social media platforms, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, and X. The DeCesare Group podcast is produced by the DeCesare Group, a full-service public relations and consulting firm in South Central Kentucky. Our engineer and president of the Big Red Fan Club is Justin DeCesare, with content contributions from Brooke Mattingly and Amy DeCesare. I'm Jim DeCesare, and join us again next time for the DeCesare Group Podcast.